The 14 sacred words there, a little bit of a trilogy. They've done another one, I think that's called Clown World as well. You can find the 14 sacred words on YouTube and on Odyssey. And I will always be eternally grateful to Moondog76 to introducing to me to that band, mate. It's the only band that makes music like that, that music fires me up. I don't like any of the other, I don't understand. That's clear, to the concise, to the point, pure white power. I really enjoyed that. Now, that last song was called Unbreakable. Now, Pepe came in earlier on the show, and he's been waiting. He always dropped links, and 9 times out of 10, I forget to check him out. But here's a bit of a white pill. It was like, that song was about the white man being unbreakable, no matter what, yeah? Tell you what, these niggers, they're easily broken. Listen to what happened to this nigger in Switzerland, mate. Just a second, where's everything gone? I just need to minimize that. There you go. Let's do this. So this is from our mate from across the channel, and that something Reynaud. Vincent Reynaud, I think is his name, or Renoir. Vincent Renoir. Oh, look, mate, I'm not French. And speaking of French, there will be a new feature to the show. I don't know if it's going to be weekly, fortnightly, or whatever. We see how it goes. But we'll be getting the voice from across the channel. And we will be having a based conversation with our mate, Uber Hench Mensch. If you check out the Telegram group, he is the Uber moderator. Yeah, if you piss Pepe off, you ain't ever coming back. That's just the rules. That's the fucking rules, mate. You know what I mean? So tread carefully around him, mate. Yeah, because he's got some good stuff to say, and he's always got the white man's back. He's been working hard all weekend. Have you recovered yet, mate? Fucking hell. yeah. But that's what the white man does. He's got a mate. He's like, mon ami. Voulez-vous voudrez assister moi dans mon maison? And he's like, mais oui, mon ami. Das ist mein... No, that's... Anyway, I don't know if he speaks German. We'll find out during the week. But what he would be doing is giving us a little breakdown of his chosen topics. I haven't discussed this with him, but like maybe three news points of the week to let you know what's going, how it's going down where in his neck of the woods. And I think if any of you get inspired by this feature that's coming up, if you would like to do a news bulletin from where you are, reach out to me on the Telegrams or on the Flood socials, and we'll see what we can do. Yeah, because this show is mainly for you, about you, and to inspire you, and never to nigger pill you. Don't get nigger pilled. There's no fucking point. I tell you what. Anyway, back to you know who's breakable? Who's breakable? These fucking niggers are. So in Switzerland, a Maghreb thief, I think that means a black thief, suffocated by the sliding door of the restaurant that he wanted to rob. Stupid nigger. So this is enough to give you ideas to our traders who suffer from these intrusions, so damaging to their turnover. So it says 20 minutes. A large-scale intervention took place on Saturday at 4 a.m. in the inner city of Vevey, according to the police. The police intervened urgently to try to resuscitate a 16-year-old nigger stuck at neck height between the two doors of the sliding door of a trade located not far from the station. Despite the rescue attempts, however, he did not survive. Yay! Contacted by our colleagues, the Vaux Cantonal police confirms the facts and gives the first dates. The victim, a nigger, who would have been wanted by to be who tried to break into a sandwich shop by forcing the electric doors to open, and then he managed to pass a part of his top of the body through before finding himself trapped by the automated locking system, which closed on his neck. An investigation is ongoing. There you go. That's a bit of a white pill there for you. See, I've said this before, and I'll probably say this many times again. But it really does not take very many organized, motivated, disciplined white men in each home nation, in each white state of the federalized United States of America. There's nothing united about it. Look, they called it the United Kingdom, and that blag worked so well, they called it the United fucking... The USSR, they put up with the United Soviet... No, it's not. Now it's the Russian Federation. Oh, it's still federalized though, mate. It's still federalized. I've fucking learned your language, mate. It's not good for no one. It's not good for no one. Anyway, what was I talking about? Shit, it just takes a few organized, disciplined, motivated white men in every home nation everywhere to actually get this shit cleaned up and sorted, because what happens is when a few motivated white men do it right, they will always attract other white men who want to be motivated. And I think, really, at this stage of the game, it is best to do it all on the down low. Do it subtly. You don't advertise it. You don't do anything like that. You just do it nice and subtle. It's a need to know basis, and those packies don't need to know that you ain't buying food off them no more. Those packies don't need to know. I mean, I showed you that video last week, or maybe the week before, about the halal butchers. Yeah, which is basically the halal and kosher and halal. The same. It's the most degenerate way to treat an animal. In slaughter, no painkillers, nothing, just fucking terrifying. Actually, from what I've read, from what I understand, and I may be incorrect, but I don't think I am. The more fear that is put into the animal, the more kosher the meat. The more fear that is put into the animal before it is dispatched, the more halal the meat. So, How come none of these fucking libtards, these lefties, are fucking protesting the kebab shops? Yeah, like fucking, there needs to be a flyer. There needs to be flyers, like fucking, for all of the kebab shops and for the kosher shops. I mean, all the food in the supermarkets is kosher. Yeah, so there's an advertising campaign. You get the lefties. They hate Tesco's. They hate all the supermarkets. Well, guess what? All the supermarkets are obliged to sell kosher food. So all the fucking 9 times out of 10, the meat might be kosher meat, might be halal meat, mate. And that is disgusting. That's degenerate. No wonder our nations are becoming demonic. If you're eating that essence, I will never, ever, ever eat in another kebab shop again. And like fucking, I don't care how convenient it is, man. And I, to be honest with you, chat, have I eaten at a kebab shop this year? No, I fucking haven't. No, I haven't. But I did eat at the kebab shop at least 5 times last year. And that's not walking the talk. That is hypocrisy. That is the definition of hypocrisy. Don't use any of them, even though I am. No, mate. No. I've got to fucking raise my fucking standards, mate. Raise my standards and raise that message. Raise that message. It's bang out of order. It's bang out of order, man. It's bang out of order. So, but the pendulum is swinging. I mentioned earlier, it's pretty normal to fucking say nigger and all of that, and like name the Jew and everything like that. And there's been a key change, as they say, in the algorithms, the Jew algorithm on YouTube. And things are being allowed to be said that have not been said for a while. Now, I tried to download it. The thing is, what I don't like about fucking all the free software I've got is like, if there's a barrier put up on YouTube, I can't download the fucking video. So I'm gonna. What's that? No. Excuse me. What am I doing? I'm looking at this. I'm done. We did that one. Oh man, I just last night, just before I went to bed, I was like, I was watching like fucking, some, you know that fucking, is it called whatever, where you've got like a married geezer who smokes a lot, who just basically fucking calling whores whores and calling them stupid and that. Where there was this one where he was arguing with this fucking dirt, this mud shark, and who was claiming she was Christian and that. And I was looking at her nose and that, and I'm like, your nose, man, your nose looks very fucking, very, very straight, but I don't think it's real. I think it's been messed with, yeah? So I thought, just a second, I've never asked this question of Brave Rabbit AI. So I was like, I'll just ask it a quick question. And the question was, who invented the modern form of nose jobs? The modern form of nose jobs, specifically the closed rhinoplasty technique, was pioneered by an American otolaryngologist something, John Orlando Rowe, in 1887. He performed the first endonasal rhinoplasty, which involved making all incisions inside the nostrils to avoid external scarring. Additionally, Jacques Joseph, a German, is often considered the father of modern rhinoplasty. He published detailed techniques of performing nose reduction rhinoplasty via internal incisions in his work, Nesplast. Hey, wait. This has changed. It named a Jew yesterday. Where's the Jew gone? It named a Jew. Literally, this has been edited since I last looked at it. Oh well. It was a Jew. It mentioned a fucking Jew yesterday. Oh well. Oh well. There was a Jew, a massive, there was a Jew involved. Like, have I missed this? Like, let me see, my dyslexia kicked in and I missed a sentence or something. He published nasoplasty. No. It's vanished. It's vanished. Anyway. So what have I got for you? I've got, this might sound niggerpilling, but it's not. It's not. Because the thing is, the war is eternal. It never ends. And it's never the men who train for the most vicious battles that find themselves on the front line. I think that's the best way of describing this. I just need to close. Right, let's shut this. Because when you find yourself in positions of dealing with Satan in this on this fucking on this earth that is ruled by him at this moment in time, you'll find yourself, and you'll hear stories of the most terrible of battles. Where the fuck is it? No, don't tell me I just closed it. No, here it is. Here it is. So the algorithm is changing, and
software underbelly is about giving people a space
hold
to
on,
tell
no,
their story.
Shut the fuck up, mate. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Where is it? Right. So we can close you. Can I close you? Yeah, I can close you. Fuck off. There you go. So this, don't get nigger pilled. Don't get nigger pilled because, like, fucking, this was stifled for so long that this guy, this, anyway, just watch it. Just watch it and listen. Watch and listen. Yeah, and this is why you need to marry your women. You need to make sure they're Christian and. If you find a woman who's been to university, mate, walk away, walk the fuck away, mate. Turn all these fucking university fucking ology women, yeah, into spinsters. Don't let them breed, man, because fucking hell.
Girl.
Who told you you're a girl? You're a boy, right?
No, I'm a girl.
Who told you you're a girl?
Mommy.
When did she tell you were a girl?
Because I love girls.
Oh, I see. So mommy told you you're a girl? Does mommy do anything else like with a girl with you? Like what?
Like kisses.
What does she do?
She do put them on me.
She puts dresses on you? Oh, wow. And what else does she do?
She buys my headbands. And she gave me hair clips.
Oh, hair clips? Okay. What else?
Some microphones.
What else?
Like a skeleton.
Does she do anything with your fingers?
Yeah.
What?
She paints my nails.
So that, why does she do that?
Because I don't like nail polish.
Oh. So mommy puts you in a dress and puts nail polish on you?
Mm-hmm.
And what does mommy tell you?
She tells me I'm a girl.
Oh, okay. Do you think you're a girl?
Uh-huh.
You do?
The state of California says that I have to pay for the chemical and physical castration of my son as child support. I'm not going to pay that child support. I'm not going to pay anything to hurt my son.
And that means you'll be going to prison?
California is going to send me to prison for that.
So, Jeff, you are going through something. You've been going through something that is probably a father's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Tell me when this started.
Started when my son was about 2 years old. My ex-wife, who's a pediatrician in Coppell, Texas, started thinking that he might be a girl and started trying to transition him to a girl. And when I tried to put a stop to that, she filed for divorce and used her relationships with care providers to force me out of my house. And so I moved about a mile up the road from my son's. She filed for divorce formally, and I had 50-50 custody of him. And just after his third birthday, I took the first iPhone video I'd ever taken, and it was him telling me that he thought he was a girl because his mommy tells him a girl. You can go on YouTube and just search for "Mommy Says I'm a Girl." You'll find that video. She was telling him things like, you know, she would put him into timeout and say, "Don't be a boy. The monsters only eat boys," and weird things like this.
Fly a kike, mate. It's not about the personality, it's about the message.
And she began to then socially transition him, and that led to a titanic battle in the state of Texas that culminated in me getting the procedures outlawed in Texas. And the political establishment in Texas allowing her to come to California so she could still castrate him, even though I got it outlawed.
Had your son, you have two sons.
I have two sons, James and Jude. They're twins. They're not identical. James is the one that she's transitioning.
And was there any sign in James that he was open to this or showing signs that he wanted to be anything other than?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So he was directly asked that by counselors and stuff. But let me just tell you about one of the fundamental facts of the case that a lot of people find shocking. James never presented as a girl with anyone but his mom. At church, with me, with his friends, he dressed as a boy and called himself James. He only presented as a girl with his mom. And I asked him one time, "Why are you doing that?" And he just flat out told me, he said, "Well, mommy doesn't love me if I'm not a girl." And that's what he told the counselors too. James is a very talented boxer. I'm a boxer. My dad was a boxer. James is extremely talented. Jude's a wrestler, but James is a very talented boxer. Olympic talent scouts were looking at him. He's that good. And they backed away from him once this all got started. He has all boyfriends. Now, he has some things that you might say are feminine. He likes art. He particularly likes painting and pastels. My son Jude likes sculpture, you know. James is also more extroverted and is willing to play with almost anybody, you know. And he will definitely play with girls. He'll play tag with girls. He'll build things with girls. He has no problem like hanging around with girls. But in terms of having a desire to be a girl, he consistently told me for 10 years that he had no desire to be a girl. He told the court-appointed counselor that he was embarrassed to wear dresses to school. He was getting too old for that and didn't want to wear dresses. And they initiated a CPS investigation against me for forcing him to be a boy, and my seventh CPS investigation.
And do you have contact with your sons now?
No, I'm disallowed all contact with my sons.
You're not allowed to even contact them?
No. And I'll tell you how this all sort of built up. So She started transitioning him, you know, really hardcore at 3. I mean, where she presented him to the world with a fake girl's name and everything. This, of course, would have been an important component in the divorce that was going on. So we get to 2017, and we have our divorce trial, and we had a custody evaluator. His name is Blake Mitchell. He practices out of Frisco, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. And he asked me, what is your top issue? And I said, my top issue is she's tampering with my son's gender identity. So he charges me $60,000 and does a one-year investigation of my family, interviewing my children over and over again, everything, and determines that she was not transitioning my son to a girl. He straight up lied to the court and said that I had made a false accusation against her for saying that she was trying to transition my son to a girl. And on that basis, I lost 50-50 custody and got less than standard possession time. So I basically got, you know, 4 days, 4 to 6 days a month with my sons. So that's how the divorce ended, with the psychologist just outright lying. Now, I've been lucky with these psychologists that lie. I've been able to prove they've lied. So the court actually set aside his report. But that's what he actually told the court in his report. So she then starts really ramping up it again. And now he's wearing makeup to school. He's using the girls' restroom at his elementary school, which was Pinkerton Middle School in Coppell, Texas. I got that school shut down. That school doesn't exist anymore in Coppell. They shut down. Got rid of the principal there. Her name is Miss Mickelson, who's the one that really transitioned my son. And I found out after 2.5 years, they had been transitioning my son secretly behind my back. So I would bring my son to Pinkerton Middle School in Coppell in boys' clothes, because he wears boys' clothes with me, and they would give him a dress and tell him to use the girls' bathroom. And when I found that out, I filed grievances against the public school. And, of course, they exonerated themselves, saying that under their nicknames policy, they're allowed to call him whatever he wants. And they're allowed to put him in dresses because he wants to wear it and it doesn't harm him in any way. And so there was just no place to go. It's virtually impossible in Texas to sue a school district because they have sovereign immunity. So this kept ramping up with my ex-wife until finally I look in the medical records with my ex-wife chose a pediatrician, Dr. Jennifer Pape, in Flower Mound, Texas, where I live. And Dr. Pape, in the medical records, it says that her and Miss Georgelis, my ex-wife, were planning on chemically castrating James at age 8 or 9. That's plain black and white in the medical records. So obviously I start to vociferously oppose this. I try to get a new pediatrician. I have to go to court to try to get a new pediatrician. That leads her to file another lawsuit against me for sole control of James.
So they were, at what age were they looking to do this?
At age 8 or 9, they were going to chemically castrate him, yeah.
And you know, I've interviewed many, many mm-hmm. people who have transitioned.
Yes.
And the majority of them, like I would say 98% of them, mm-hmm. are not castrating. They're just choosing to be identified.
They're just cross-dressing, yeah.
They're cross-dressers who are saying that they're women.
Yes. We used to call it transvestitism. We don't do that anymore.
They keep changing the name.
Yeah. In my view, they've invented a kind of identity around this, but that we can talk about that. But with the pattern that you see is with boys, it's mothers transitioning prepubescent boys, and they put them on puberty blockers. And there's a simple reason that the gender doctors have to put these kids on puberty blockers. And the reason is puberty is the cure for gender dysphoria. Puberty is when you come to grips with your gender role and you either become gay or a boy, right? 98% of the time, they just become normal boys.
That's when the testosterone kicks in.
That's right.
And you become a boy who chases girls.
That's right.
For the rest of our lives.
Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
And so they have to block puberty to extend the gender dysphoria in order to get them into the pipeline for the surgeries. And so there's a money pipeline with these clinics. Each child that goes on puberty blockers becomes a $4.5 million lifetime income stream for the clinics. and they're residual income streams, so they can have hundreds of them at the same time. So they're making hundreds of dollars a year, hundreds of millions of dollars a year off of these kids. So they block puberty to stop the cure, because puberty is the cure for gender dysphoria. And I believe puberty is actually a human right. Puberty is when you become fully human. Puberty is when your brain matures, an adult rational faculty. It's when you come to grips with your roles and your duties in society, which is the marker of a mature adult person, someone who can assume those duties in a benevolent way, right? It's when your body matures. As you know, what a shame it would be for these young men. I mean, they'll never know. These young men that went on puberty will never know the grace and power the male body is capable of in its youth. They'll never know that. And what a shame to miss that. That confidence that comes from that carries on into middle age. And that's where you get entrepreneurship and the risk taking in America. It's from the physical experiences. That's why sports are important in America for men. You know, it builds a certain kind of character. All of that stuff is what puberty is. And so I consider it a human right. It's essentially denying a child the full development of their rational faculties, their emotional faculties, and their physical faculties. And so I think it's an actual human rights violation. So anyway, this thing just like goes crazy, right? Where she's trying to transition him. They're talking about castrating him at age 8 or 9. So I immediately go full court press in Texas to get this made illegal. And it took me 6 years to do it, and hundreds of thousands of dollars of my own money. The entire Texas Republican establishment fought me on it. They did not want to take a vote on this. And the reason for that may surprise you. The transgender movement was started by Republicans, was not started by Democrats. Yeah, we could talk about that. The donor class of the Republican Party did not want this outlawed. That's why all these Republican governors were vetoing these bills when they would pass them, like, and in Arkansas and Alabama, Mississippi, and so forth. So I immediately start lobbying to do this, and I have to use grassroots organizing because I can't rely on the moral conscience of the legislature because they're being paid by these donors that don't want it to be made legal. So that's the first thing. Then we go to trial in 2019, 255th District Court under Judge Kim Cooks. The top transgender experts in the world show up in this little courtroom. Worldwide media. So I'm an Orthodox Christian. So the James's story went all over Eastern Europe, even into Russia, all over the place. Because these are Orthodox countries that are formally Christian countries. Their state religion is Orthodox Christianity. And they think of Texas as being in the Bible Belt. So they're like, how does this happen to an Orthodox boy in Texas? Like, it didn't make sense. So it was a story that was that had legs all over these Orthodox countries. So we had international media there. It was a circus. So I had Dr. Levine as my expert. He founded the first gender clinic in America in Johns Hopkins University in 1974. And after 4 years, in 1978, they shut their clinic down because their data showed that their treatments were harming patients. And we know now the data that's coming out of Children's Hospital here in LA, the data that the University of Texas at Austin, which is as liberal as Berkeley, by the way, just put out a comprehensive meta study showing that these treatments actually harm patients. The CAS report in the UK, which is the largest systematic review ever done in any psychological discipline in the history of psychology, found it harms patients. Every meta study and systematic review finds that these treatments don't work and they actually harm patients. So he's the one who testified for me. They had Johanna Olson Kennedy, who was running LA Children's Hospital Gender Clinic. She doesn't anymore because of a huge scandal. In which she has been hiding data. She was given an NIH grant to study outcomes for children on these treatment programs, and she showed no benefit in her data for the treatment programs, and she chose not to release the data because she said it would be used by opponents of transgender medicine. That's the state of science in the transgender world. Wow. So she came in. I deposed her. I did a video deposition with her. And I asked her one question, and the other side dropped her as an expert. And here's the question I asked her, and her answer says everything you need to know about the other side of this issue. I said, what is your medical justification for amputating healthy body parts from children? She said, if they cause psychological distress, they're not healthy body parts. Opposing counsel was a woman, was in the room. She threw her pen on the floor and quit the case. She left. It was so disgusting. And they were not going to put her in front of a Texas jury saying that. So they dropped her. So I won the 2019 trial. I got 50-50 custody. I got no child support. But the most important thing is I got a check on all medical procedures. So she could not chemically castrate him at age 8 or 9. Okay. By a few years later after this, I successfully got a law passed which outlawed these procedures. You could lose your medical license for doing these things. So in that intervening 2 years...
In Texas.
In Texas. In that intervening 2 years, the judges, the liberal judges in Dallas County, Texas, got very upset that I got 50-50 custody and that James is not going to be transitioned. So they sua sponte moved my case from the 255th District Court into the 301st District Court with Judge Mary Brown, who I'll henceforth call Bloody Mary Brown. Judge Bloody Mary Brown never gave me 50-50 custody, never gave me a check on the medical procedures, and never eliminated my child support. She completely ignored the jury verdict. And over a period of about 3 years, she systematically stripped me of all parental rights. And she used a technique that's very common in family court. First of all, she gave me an order that I couldn't follow. That's what they'll do. They'll give you an order that you just can't follow. So I was running for office in Texas. I ran for a Texas representative in House District 63. And I was in the middle of a campaign. And she issued a gag order on me, which gave me a lifetime ban on doing any podcast interviews, writing any newspaper articles, doing blog posts, posting videos, appearing in YouTube videos. It's a totally unconstitutional gag order. It also prohibited me from talking about 3 political topics. I could not talk about transgenderism, gender dysphoria, or gender expansiveness. And I was prohibited in public from telling anyone whether my son was a boy or a girl. Well, obviously, if you're running for office and your campaign platform is outlawing transgender surgeries on kids, you can't follow this order. And she very well knew I could not follow it. So I didn't follow it. I gave interviews. My campaign materials referenced the transgender issue and everything. So that's the first thing she did. The second thing she did is she reasoned, and this is a classic family court tactic. So I have an illegal gag order, right? She literally reasoned this way verbally in court. She said, well, there's this illegal gag order, this gag order that you say is illegal, Mr. Younger. It's prima facie illegal. But the illegal gag order was entered in the best interest of your children. So by not following the illegal gag order, you're not acting in the best interest of your children. And on that basis, gave me supervised visitation. And this is a very common tactic that judges use in family court as well. And we'll get to what happened in California. It was just used on me yesterday at 9:30 Texas time. And we'll talk about that. So, and it's about free speech as well. Because they know that's what will get you. What they try to do in family court is they try to find out what the father can't do or won't do. And then they construct orders which forces him to violate the orders. And then they take his kids from him. That's how it works. So I had 3 principles when I started that I said I was going to follow because, you know, I needed some kind of moral guide here. So I said, 1, I'm never going to hurt my son. They're never going to, no matter what they order, I'm never hurting my son. That's 1. 2, I'm never going to morally miseducate my son. I'm never going to tell him things that are morally incorrect. I will never miseducate him in that way. And 3, I said I would never let my resources be used to hurt him or morally miseducate him. So those are the 3 principles way back in 2017 that I wrote down. It's in my office. You know, like I live by those principles. So they give me supervised visitation with forensic counseling services in Dallas County. Notice that I name names. And I name names in every interview, and they've never sued me for defamation because I can prove everything I'm saying is true, and truth is an absolute defense against defamation. So forensic counseling services is run by two gay men. One of them is fairly rational guy, kind of like him, nice guy. One of them, though, is a huge transgender activist. He refused to let me change my son out of a dress when my son came for the supervised visits. He refused to let me use my son's real name, his legal name, and he refused to let me pray with my sons in the supervised visits. And here's why he did that. Let me tell you again how family court works. He knew very well that my son would be embarrassed to be in a dress in front of me. And he would report that as fear, not embarrassment. And that would give the court more ammunition. Right? He knew that if I used James's real name, he would be forced to report that James was in boy's clothes using his boy's name and he was perfectly comfortable with it with his father. And he didn't want to report that. He wanted to report that James is uncomfortable as a boy, you see? So he could not let me be with James when he's just normal James. And finally, these psychologists have no theory. If you ask them in depositions, like, what is the empirical theoretical basis for the judgments you put in these reports, they fully admit that they don't have any. They say that they're just making observations about the child, but you're like, wait a minute, you know, expert testimony requires a scientific basis. What's the scientific basis for this? And they admit they don't have it, but it's still admitted. Family courts will still admit this. So we got into it with him, and then I said, well, I can't do the supervised visits. So you see how they created another condition where I cannot comply with the order. You see how it works?
Yeah.
So now I'm not complying with a gag order, and now I'm not complying with supervised visitation. So they let this go for 18 months, which is a special benchmark in Texas, right? 18 months with no visitation. And then my ex-wife filed to move to California, saying that I had abandoned my sons because I wasn't visiting them. The judge said, well, Mr. Younger, we were perfectly allowed to go visit your sons. There was nothing stopping you from visiting your sons, and you just haven't done it. And I tell her, well, you know, I would morally miseducate my son. I would be directly harming my son by using his girl's name and teaching him that he's a girl when he's not. And you would be forcing me to pay $500 per visit, which is what it costs, per visit, so I'd be using my resources to hurt my son. And I've told this court repeatedly, those three things I'm never going to do. And she said, well, I conclude that you have abandoned your sons because you had every opportunity to go visit them. This is the game they play. So Judge Bloody Mary Browns then allowed my ex-wife to move my kids to California since I had abandoned them in Texas, of course. Not to mention that I write them letters all the time. You know, every time they go into a new school grade, you know, I ask them to tell me what they're studying. That I'm, you know, I have a Substack, and I write letters to them online all the time. None of this stuff is even in the orders. It was not even allowed to be entered into evidence. They said it was all hearsay. It's another thing they do. They keep out some evidence so that the judge can say, you know, on appeal, the judge say, well, this is the only facts I had available. You see, this is the game that gets played. If you want to know, you know, how the corruption in the Trump trials could happen, the template was from family court. It was family court lawyers that built the template for how to do this in criminal and civil courts. Family court was the template for it. And was developed, these strategies were developed by unscrupulous law firms in the late 80s and early 90s. And judges received most of their campaign donations from these law firms. And so the judges have kind of gone along with it. And now we've got from the 90s to now, all the judicial training programs are run by those unscrupulous law firms. And so judges think this is just normal. You know, family court judges will just brag like, yeah, we violate people's constitutional rights all the time because we go with the best interests of the child. And they brag about violating parents' constitutional rights. And they hated me for making constitutional rights arguments, because the great fear of all family courts is that one day some father's going to make it into federal court. And they're going to have to rule that these gag orders are unconstitutional, that these supervised visitations are unconstitutional. Because honestly, if there hasn't been a criminal adjudication that a parent is unfit or unwilling to parent, then there's no basis for the court to interfere in the parent-child relationship. There is no 14th Amendment basis to do it. So the federal courts, I've been up to federal court many times trying to get in the federal court. I know many fathers too have as well. There's an actual rule promulgated by the Supreme Court, and every Chief Justice since 1988 has reaffirmed the rule. And it just says we're not taking any cases out of family court. It's called the Domestic Relations Exception Rule. They just say we're not taking any cases out of family court. Doesn't matter if it implicates your constitutional rights. Doesn't matter if it violates the civil rights statutes. Doesn't matter. We're not taking anything out. Any cases from family court. And so they all just get dismissed. They never get heard. And that's what's happened to me repeatedly.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
What has this done to you emotionally?
Well, what's the best way to describe that? So imagine you have children. And imagine, like me, you had children late in life. These are the only kids you're ever going to have. Two boys, and you're really close with them. You're really, really close with them to the point where they can almost read your mind and you can almost read their mind. You know, it was something that my current wife would always remark on, that we would all three of us just get up and go do things and we didn't talk about it. We all knew, like somehow we were just that close. So imagine you have kids that you're that close with and you're put in a chair. And a judge brings your children into the room and initially threatens to sexually mutilate them, to castrate them, and begins to teach them all kinds of things that are completely against your ethical beliefs, totally against your ethical beliefs. And the children are punished harshly if they don't assent to these crazy things. And imagine eventually they chemically castrate your kids and you got to sit there and the judge and a police officer are watching you intently. And if at any time you show anger or you stand up or you gesture in a strong way, they're going to conclude that you are a domestic abuser. And they're going to arrest you and put you in jail for domestic abuse. So you have to sit there and remain totally calm in the slow motion sexual abuse of your child. That's what it's like. That's what it's been like for me.
It's horrifying.
I see the end result that's coming. And if I am too masculine in my response, they're going to say, you're abusive. You know, they tried so hard with my sons, the counselors, court-appointed counselors. They tried for years with my sons. They're like, isn't Mr. Younger an authoritarian parent? They ask leading questions like that of my sons. It's in the records. Isn't Mr. Younger an authoritarian? Isn't he tell you what to do all the time? And of course, I'm just the opposite. My sons were like, no, Dad doesn't have any rules. They're like, what? No rules in the house? Like, I don't have rules. No. Dad just tells us to be reasonable with people. And if we're reasonable with people, we don't have to have rules. He did have to make one rule. I remember James saying, Dad did have to make one rule. We broke two iPads, so now we have to keep our iPads on tables. They can't be on the floor. But that's the only rule we have. And so they could never pin that on me. But that's another strategy, is they weaponize masculinity, right? So I had to reteach myself how to talk in court. I talk like a woman in court. I literally got female attorneys and emulated them, learned how to talk like them. Because the masculine way that a boxer like me relates to another boxer, You're not only going to lose your kids, they're going to put you under a domestic violence restraining order. And you're going to lose your passport. You're going to lose your licensure in the state. If you're a stockbroker, you're going to lose your license. You can't possess a firearm. Lifetime. Can't possess a firearm. They're going to do that to you if you're too masculine. So I had to retrain all that. So not only imagine you're watching your kid being sexually abused, but now you got to start acting like a woman and be very passive, because it could get much worse for your kid, actually. They could remove you in such a way that they could give you a lifetime restraining order and you could never contact your kids again for the rest of their lives.
So there's a chance you might be going to prison for this, right?
Yeah, I could tell you that I'm definitely going to be going to prison, because the current position of the law is that I have to pay for the chemical and physical castration of my son as medical child support. And I told you the three principles. We've gone through that. I'm never going to hurt my son. I'm not going to let my resources be used to hurt my son. So I'm just not going to pay that child support. I'm not doing it. And eventually, I'll be prosecuted for it. And in California, I can get up to 2 years in slammer. So that's the kind of pressure and emotional boiler, is the way I would describe it, that you're under. It's pretty intense. And, you know, when I'm arguing in court, and I gave up using lawyers years ago because the bar is a cartel, and members of the bar are never going to challenge judges on these fundamental rights issues. That's why one of the reasons we never get really rights issues heard is lawyers won't make them. They won't make them to judges because it's challenging the judge. So I went pro se a long time ago, and I've been much more effective pro se. But, you know, I have to sit there and
so
make...
So you're representing yourself?
Oh, yeah. I've been doing that for 7 years, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I've beat some of the top law firms in America. I mean, I don't think it's that hard to be pro se. The biggest problem you have as pro se is the judges are supposed to give you more leeway as pro se. Like, if you make a mistake, they're supposed to say, hey, did you mean to do this, or can we do it this way? They're allowed to do that with pro se. They're not allowed to do that with a bar attorney. But in practice, what actually happens is they never tell you your mistakes. In fact, they try to trick you. And family court judges in particular are notorious for getting parents to voluntarily waive all of their constitutional rights. So I'll give you an example of that in Texas. So judge entered this order for supervised visitation and all this, and she very politely says, you know, Mr. Younger, I really think we can, if you go to these supervised visits, we can get this order removed and all this stuff. And it's all lies. Judges are just actors. And she says, you know, so are you prepared to sign the order now? And I said, well, judge, I'm not going to sign the order. And she said, Mr. Younger, this is a court of law, and this is an order from the court. And I said, well, then you need to sign it. It's your order. What she's trying to trick me into doing was signing approval of the order. Now I can't appeal it, and I've voluntarily given her jurisdiction over all the matters listed. Okay, that's one of the tricks they do. So she said, well, I mean, I don't know what to do. I'm going to have another hearing. I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll agree that it has the form of a judicial order. I'll agree to the form of the order. But I don't agree to any of the content. So I sent as the form, but not the content. And she was forced to just put it out there without my signature. Most parents will sign those documents. Most lawyers who are representing parents will sign the document. And if your lawyer signs the document, you assented to it. So actually, most of the things that happen in family court that violate parents' rights, parents are tricked into giving up their rights. And I never did that. And that's what drove them crazy. And that's why they eventually had to let my son move out of Texas.
What a nightmare for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did James show any signs of wanting to be a female around you?
Never. In fact, I had a dress at home in his closet. And I taught him mathematics through woodworking and stuff. You know. So we built their beds and everything. And so they had their own room. And they had the furniture was all custom, you know, stuff. And they had this, they tricked out the closet with how they hang their stuff up and all that. And he had a dress in there. And I said, look, if you want to experiment wearing a dress, you can do that here in the house. It's not a problem. You can do it anytime you want. A few weeks go by, and I hear this noise. I get up. I have a bed. My master bedroom's on the downstairs floor. I get up, and James is going back up. The light goes off. And he threw the dress away in the middle of the night when he thought I wasn't looking. So I never saw any of these things. And even when I would go to, and I have tons of video of this, you know, I'll go to pick my son up for my visitation periods from my ex-wife's house. He comes out of her house in boy's clothes.
I mean, you could argue that he's doing that just to please his dad.
Yeah, definitely. But what it shows is he's comfortable in boy's clothes at his mom's house and his dad's house.
Do you think the mom kind of brainwashed him into thinking this was something that was...
Oh, there's no question in my mind about it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I mean, when I told you when I asked him that question, why did you do this? And he says, mommy doesn't love me if I'm not a girl. That's why he did it. That's why he did it, you know. And you know, I have had a lot of so-called gender experts, you know, because I've had just in my California trial recently, you know, they put an expert on the stand that I destroyed, a transgender, top transgender doctor from Children's Hospital here. Destroyed this woman. So I talk to them all the time, and they say, well, gender is innate and immutable. It's something that you're born with. It's innate and immutable. And so I just go, well, if it's innate and immutable, then how could there possibly be detransitioners? How could that even be possible? They'll say things like, you know, people know their gender identity from an early age. How is that when there's no sexual identity that you have until you go through puberty, early stages of puberty? How is that possible? Like, it contravenes everything we know about child development from before. So in this regard, I'm somewhat different than a lot of the people that oppose this child transgender stuff. I think actually you learn to be a man and a woman. I think there's a set of potentialities, you know, like a male child is going to have higher testosterone levels, and there are different potential behaviors from that, from a child that has less testosterone, like a female child. But basically, you learn to be a man mainly from other men. And this used to not be very controversial. You know, if you look at the whole history of child rearing in the Western world, and even I know quite a bit about the Eastern world, it's very similar there. Children typically were raised by their mothers until they were 9 to 12. And that's actually the origin of why Italians were kind of considered mama's boys, because they stayed in the home till they were 12, when Germans, you know, left their mother's home at 9, you know, so they're like, ah, look at those Italians, they stay with their moms, you know. But basically, men raised older children who were boys, and women raised young children and girls. That's how the world has worked forever, right? You learn to be a man from other men. And it's not innate. And I think the prison studies show this on even sexuality, I think. Sexuality's fluid. Like, these things are not like identities. And that's really, if I had to put my finger on like where this crazy stuff came from, is there was a, in the middle part of the 20th century, but it started before that, goes back to the late 1800s, there was a radical redefinition of the human person. So what's happening in America is not really a conflict over transgender rights or left versus right or, social construction theories in psychology versus innate views of the innate person. It's not that. That's not what's happening. What's happening is we have two large groups in America that just don't agree on what a human person is. And so when I say he's my child, that word child, they don't mean the same thing when they say child. And let me give you an example of this. So there's a really good book by a guy named Truman. It's called The Rise and Triumph of the Expressive Self, which chronicles this change. And, you know, if you were to ask my grandfather, you know, he was a farmer, and he literally could outwork. 2 weeks before he died, he literally outworked me on the farm. He could literally outwork me to the day he died. Tough guy. And if you were to ask him, like, does farming fulfill you? Are you self-fulfilled as a farmer? You probably would have spent 4 hours trying to explain the question, because those categories don't go together. Farming was a way he raised his kids and sent his kids to school. And you know, he did the hard physical labor, and now his kids can do white collar labor. He did that by farming. You know, it wasn't something he liked to do. It didn't even occur to him that whether he would like it or not. He just had to do it, right? That you can see, it's pretty easy for people to see there's been a different change in the way we think about work. People can see that. It's harder to see how this idea of the person changed, but you can see it very clearly with sexual identity. So you ask a Christian like me about sexual identity, and I'm going to say, I don't even know what that is. Sexuality is a behavior. And you're in control of your behaviors. So I don't know what you mean by a sexual identity. It doesn't even make sense. To me, it doesn't even make sense, right? And to a large portion of America, it doesn't make sense, right? So when people talk about sexuality, they're really not talking about the same thing. Then on the other side, if I steel man the other side will say, well, no, sexuality is innate and immutable. And who you're attracted to is innate and immutable. So it's a status, not a behavior. And we don't agree on that in this country, right? Similarly with transgenderism, this idea of a gender identity. Well, I think of gender identity as something you learn, behaviors and duties that you learn from your father and you carry on to your children. And it has to be taught. If it has to be taught, how could it be innate and immutable? How could the gender expression of males be different across cultures if it was innate, biologically innate? That doesn't even make sense, right, to me. Now, let's steel man the other side, and here's what I think goes on in the mind of these people that want to transition their kids, especially boys. They go, well, here's this child, and I believe that sexual identity is the center point of human identity. It's the starting point of almost all aspects of human identity. And people, I've had a lot of people who are on the right with me who say, why would anyone believe that? And I'm like, well, imagine you have a view that's completely conditioned by the theory of evolution, for example. It's the theory of evolution is the theory of sexual selection. So your sexuality is the primary mover of all human progress and advancement. It makes perfect sense, actually, when you think about it like that. So sexuality is this center pivot point at which all other parts of your identity move around. So now you look at a child who maybe is struggling in school or something, and you go, well, this child has no sexual identity. They're prepubescent. Sexual identity doesn't develop until the early part of puberty. So when they look at a child, they see a child with no identity, because there's no sexual identity. So they give the child one. They give the child a sexual identity by which they can express themselves. And they use that language. When you listen to them, this is the language they use. I want to give my child an identity so they can express themselves and experiment with who they really are. This is the language that they use. The idea of experimenting with your identity. And you see that contradicts innate and immutable too. That doesn't work either. But that's the strongest way I can show this change in human thinking about it. Even on sexuality and gender, half the country thinks it's a behavior, and half the country thinks it's an innate and immutable biological trait. And so there's no way for us to have a rational discussion about this unless we understand how we're using the same words for different concepts. So we're talking past one another. And when I'm in court, I'm very adept at explaining that to judges and showing that what these transgender doctors are saying is incoherent with our entire knowledge of child development in the past. So the transgender issue isn't really just a it's not just some child policy issue or some, you know, crazy liberals. As a lot of conservatives, it's just crazy liberals and all. It's not that. It's much more fundamental than that. We have become so decadent, and I don't mean like debauched. I mean in the Latin sense, decadenced. We have become so out of step with one another that we don't even agree on what a human person is. And we can't raise our children the same way. And that's how bad it's become. And I think the future is going to look, and I recognize it's going to go on YouTube, so I have to be careful I say this. The future is going to look something like this. If we're going to stay together and we're going to pursue a national identity together, these two groups that don't agree on fundamental things, they don't agree on the good life, they don't agree even on what a human person is, we're probably going to have to go back to a radical federalist idea in this country where we just go, okay, California is going to chemically castrate kids, and in Texas, you'll get the death penalty for it. And we're just going to have to accept that California and Texas just don't have – we don't have to live the same kind of lives. But the transgender issue is the fissure point. It's the issue which defines all of the other differences. It's the one that shows most clearly because people either assent to it or they don't, and there's no in between. So it's a bellwether issue for the country, and we should pay close attention to it, I think, because of that. Yeah.
Mm. So your sons are how old now?
They're 12, almost 13.
And has James done any hormone therapy or any kind of?
So she doesn't have to notify me, but she filed in court in California to put him on puberty blockers. So I'm pretty sure he's on puberty blockers. And I should probably tell you how he got to California. So Judge Bloody Mary Brown, 301st District Court, Dallas, Texas, issues this order which allows her to move my son to California. I actually seek emergency mandamus relief from the Texas Supreme Court. And I went up there with Justice Young and Justice Blacklock, who were leading the court's analysis of my case. Justice Blacklock, rather absurdly, and this is under the influence of the donors, said that my son was no more likely to be chemically castrated in California than in Texas, which is just the stupidest thing you could ever say. It's illegal in Texas, and it's required in California. It's a required medical treatment in California that 12-year-olds can consent to, by the way, in California. So he made that up. He made that up. And about 6 months after he issued that ruling, the governor of Texas promoted him to chief justice. And what happened was I created so much mayhem in Texas to get that law passed and outlawing this stuff in Texas that the Republicans in Texas said, we just want this case to move out of the state so it's not a political problem anymore. They wanted it to move to California. And so and that's what they're telling all the constituents now. Well, that Jeff Unger case is in California. It's not in Texas. There's nothing we can do about it anymore. Yeah. That's how the world really works. The world, you know, we think of the courts as these august institutions with men who, you know, study old books and they apply, you know, common sense and wisdom. And that's not
prevailed.
No, it's highly political. Everything that goes to the courts is highly political. So it's my intention to go after Justice Blacklock, Chief Justice Blacklock in the Supreme Court and remove him from office. And I'll be working very hard to do that over the next 5 years.
What does this mean for you legally? Are there repercussions for you?
Yeah. So what happened was the case got moved to L.A. County. And I wound up in Department 63 under Judge Mark Juhas. And right from the very beginning, some very strange things happened in this case. So I had a federal case going on. And it was just to seek declaratory relief to relieve me of the unconstitutional gag order. There was a mistake made. You know the MOFO law firm?
I
Morris Forster. They are the most powerful law firm in California. They represent Google, Facebook, all those people. That's the law firm I was facing. Their retainers are astronomical. So I've always known that my wife was getting help from somewhere, but because it's so much money, like how can she afford the retainers on the lawyers in Texas? It's the law firm is Coons Fuller. Their minimum retainer is $175,000 minimum. And they triple that going to trial. Like, so she's spending $500,000 every time she sues me. And she sued me over and I've been in a continuous lawsuit for 11 years. So imagine she spent millions of dollars. Where's this money coming from? Well, I learned this in the federal lawsuit. Once I had moved to California, I file in the central district with the federal court to get rid of this gag order. And the MOFO lawyer, MOFO is Morris Forster. So that's actually their website, mofo.com. So sends an email. And I think there were a number of lawyers copied in the C-Money. I think those lawyers should have been in the BCC field, the blind copy field. But they were in the CC field, and I think it was a mistake. And they were lawyers from nonprofit NGOs that are funded by USAID and George Soros. So it became very apparent to me at that point why it was so politically difficult to get the law passed in Texas and so forth. So let me now explain a little bit of the background about how Republicans actually started the transgender movement. So the largest donor to the Republican Party today is a guy named Paul Singer. And Paul Singer founded the Human Rights Campaign. You know the yellow equal sign? Yeah, a Republican founded that, not a Democrat. And he also runs the Manhattan Institute, completely funds it, which is a prominent conservative think tank. He funds the Claremont Institute and is a substantial donor to the Heritage Foundation. So he has a lot of say over what these people do. He's deeply committed to the transgender issue and funded lawsuits for it all over the country. Created the framework for corporations to the scoring system for gay and transgender people that are used for investments, you know, like Vanguard and all these big investment things, whether they're going to invest in buy your stock or not. He invented all that stuff. So he's the largest donor to the Republican Party. He's the largest out-of-state donor to politicians in Texas. So that's what I'm actually fighting here. That's what I've actually been fighting. Billionaire hedge fund guys that want leftist social policies. So I'm in this California court and I find this, I see these lawyers and these foundations. And I'm like, oh, that's what's really happening. So then my antenna is up. And California's weird in family court. You get three judges in a California family court. You get a supervising judge, which was Judge Kaufman. In LA County. You get a home court judge, which was Judge Cazotti, and then you get a trial judge. And it allows you to kind of almost have like a little appeal for things. If something doesn't go quite right, you can go back up to the supervising judge, have a look at it, right? So right off the bat, we meet with home court judge, Judge Cazotti. She's completely taken my side. She's like, why can't this man see his kids? There's no reason he can't see his kids. There's no domestic violence. There's no even allegations of abuse. It's never occurred. Like, why can't he see his kids? Opposing counsel starts texting. Then the judge picks up her phone and reads a text. And she says, we're going to take a 30-minute recess. She walks out of the courtroom. Even the court reporter was like, what? What happened? She comes in after 30 minutes and says nothing other than the following. This case is sealed. And walks out. The clerks at the LA County courthouse completely deleted all my records. My lawyer could not access them. I could not access them. Nobody could access them. Except, interestingly, opposing counsel, the one who sent the text, could still access them. So that's the first thing weird that happened. My entire record was deleted. They have a way of keeping it offline so you can only get paper copies. They have a way of protecting the paper copies. We have to get permission from a judge. They didn't do that. They actually deleted it. So
That happens. Then they collapse all three of those judicial functions into one judge, Mark Juhas, who's my trial court judge. So now he's the supervising judge, the home court judge, and the trial judge. He rules that the records are sealed, the case is sealed, and no one may enter the courtroom except me, the lawyers, and expert witnesses. So the public was denied the right to view the trial. No one saw what they did to me in there. And this is really important, and the judge probably had to do this to prevent himself from being prosecuted. So there's a whole network of court watchers in family court, and here's what we found. Some of them will secretly record. They're not supposed to, but they'll secretly record the proceedings. Then we get the court reporter's record, and it doesn't match the audio recording. And it happens all the time. The judges are instructing the court reporters to alter the record to prevent an appeal. And a lot of times, these judges are committing felonies on the bench by violating criminal statutes. That won't be in the record. One of the things in my written record that's a lot, they just put three dots and say they couldn't hear me. So I made objections which were important on appeal, but they don't show in the record because the court reporter couldn't hear me. So that's why he had to keep people out of the court to prevent illicit recording, because he knew very well what he was going to do. And sure enough, right off the bat, he denies me an independent medical exam. The medical status of this child is the fundamental issue, right? The medical and psychological status of the child. He denies me an independent medical exam. He denies me an independent psychological exam. And the other side didn't even have to give me evidence in discovery, which violates the Discovery Act in California and is grounds for disbarment. I didn't get any discovery in my case. But I had to provide discovery. I provide over 1,000 pages of discovery. That's a lot of work, you know, a week's worth of work. So right off the bat, he goes down this road. Then I noticed a change in him, and I think somebody on the appellate court got to him and said, you know, you're being so unfair to the guy. I don't know that if he comes up here, we'll have to rule for him because it looks so bad right now. So then he became scrupulously fair after that. And let me make my case. I destroyed their witnesses. Then when he comes out with his ruling, he basically removes the gag order, the illegal gag order, because in California, apparently in the appellate court, that's just not going to stand here. They allow free speech here, so that's it. In a very funny moment in the court, forced him to admit that right-wing speech was free speech. He really didn't want to do that, but that was pretty funny. So he takes that gag order off. Then he still keeps me on supervised visitation, but he now says phone calls have to be supervised. So a phone call to my kid's going to cost me $500, right? And he says she doesn't have to give the kids your letters. And if you send presents, she doesn't have to give them to the kids. And she doesn't have to tell you anything about their medical or educational or anything. You don't get any notifications at all. So that's what happened. So we go through some post-trial litigation after. They're trying to get me to pay, I think, $99,000 in legal fees and all this stuff. Family court is really about getting the father to fund all the litigation, because they want the father to go away, basically. So we're doing this post-trial litigation. I file an anti-SLAPP lawsuit. And California has an anti-SLAPP statute which lets you challenge any attempt to silence your speech, and it's mandatory that you get attorney's fees if you win. So he had to rule on the anti-SLAPP motion. It's mandatory. So what he said was, Mr. Younger admitted in my court, he says, in the ruling that I just got yesterday morning. Mr. Younger admitted in my court that he is going to continue to be politically active and try to outlaw transgender procedures in California. Mr. Younger's speech, however, political speech, however, has resulted in harassment of plaintiff, my ex-wife. Therefore, it's not covered under the anti-SLAPP statute because his political speech was harassment. He never connects the fact that I'm lobbying for laws or doing interviews like the one I'm doing now to actual harassment of her. I'm sure third parties have harassed her. I believe her when she says it. It's just I'm not harassing her, right? I hardly mention her name, right? But he used the fact that she had been harassed by third parties who are nameless, but nobody knows who they are, to maintain some of the speech restrictions on me. He's basically said in the ruling, Mr. Younger, if you're going to use your political rights and try to outlaw transgender procedures on kids in California, you can't see your kids. That's basically what the ruling says. And that's where I'm at now. So I'm working on an election recall on Mark Juhas because he's done this to several other fathers. So he has a pattern of behavior on the bench of violating parental rights. I'm working on a recall of Gavin Newsom. And in the high desert areas in Southern California, people are not happy with him. And I think we can get a recall election. I don't know if we can win it, but I think we can get a recall election. And I have already prepared model legislation for the California legislature to outlaw these procedures on kids. And we're going to put a lot of grassroots pressure on some of these people to do this. And, of course, we're going to have to go head-to-head with your Senator Scott Wiener. You know, I've always said that if I could ever agree to any transgender operation, it would be to cut Wiener out of the California Senate. That guy needs to go. He's going to be our main obstacle. He's politically powerful because he's a donation magnet for big donors who want to push this stuff. Guys like Paul Singer and guys like George Soros. I do think I got some benefit from President Trump's executive order. I was working with his staff and was in contact with them about this, and they promised me that he would do it in the first month, and they did it in the first 3 weeks. It's actually the first time elected officials ever kept a promise to me. And I do think James is not on cross-sex hormones yet. And Children's Hospital has said after Trump's order that if you're already on a treatment plan, we'll keep doing it, but we're not putting any new kids on it. So it may prevent my son from getting cross-sex hormones. And why is that important? If you look at the statistics, every child that goes into cross-sex hormones, 100% of them go to surgery. 100%. It alters the brain and it alters things sufficiently that all of them go to surgery. So keeping my son off cross-sex hormones is my main focus right now. I'm going to also work with two senators who have already introduced bills to allow children who have been victimized by these procedures with a 30-year statute of limitations, because we don't know the long-term effects of this stuff, to sue the clinics. That long statute of limitations would be enough for most clinics to shut it down because it's too risky legally. I'm trying to get Senator Hawley to modify his bill in the federal Congress to allow parents to sue as well. And that's what Trump's executive order calls for. So Trump has directed the agencies to work with the Congress to make that happen. So all the agencies will assist me in doing that. And I'll be there next month in D.C. working on that. So basically what's happened is my ex-wife generated more leftist political power in Texas and California than I was able to produce. She produced more political power than me and was able to eventually, after 10 years, chemically castrate my son. So what I'm going to have to do is generate even more political power in order to try to keep him off cross-sex hormones. And that's basically where I'm at right now.
Mm. Heartbreaking story.
Yeah.
How's your mental health?
Well, there's some things I've learned. I remember sitting in a deposition facing Jessica Janicek, who was the top attorney from Koons Fuller. She's a specialist in removing fathers from children's liability. She has a technique for getting every father onto supervised visitation. Took her a long time with me, but she eventually got me. I was in a deposition, and she was using incredibly insulting language about my children and other things. And I realized she was trying to bait me to act like a man. And if I acted like a man, they can say I'm abusive. And I realized that being calm was a weapon that I could use. And I can tell you definitely in that California courtroom, my calmness saved me from lots of it could have been a lot worse for me from Judge Mark Uoss. But that ability to be calm. And that has actually, I think, had mental health benefits.
I'm sure.
You know, to be under extreme stress and duress, but be able to remain calm.
The way you presented this whole story without getting upset or swearing or anything like that.
Yeah, and I really want to.
Is remarkable.
You've probably saw me bite back a few because I know we're on YouTube. But it's like, so there's that. I think there's a sense also of the long game. You know, no matter what happens to James, there's nothing that no mistake he can make that's so bad he can't get to heaven. He can always get to heaven, right? And so you have to have a sense of proportion. It's a temporary life we lead here. I believe in a life that transcends this life. And if you have a belief like that, you take things seriously, but not too seriously. You know what I'm saying? So my son's the condition of my son's spirit is more important to me than his body. Put it that way. And so I'm playing the long game. And I mean, I'm 60. You know, I'm almost 60. And you know, I just want to be around long enough to help him over that. Want to leave him a legacy to get started on. I want his brother to keep some of the awesome character traits that his brother has, his brother Jude, and build on those things. So I'm just playing the long game, and I think that helps. I have, you know, my dad used to tell me, you know, like when things are really bad and you just have lost hope and stuff, you know, like when I was not a very good boxer at first. And for some reason, I didn't have good perception. You know, my dad could never quite figure out why, but I was a real powerful hitter, but I would get hit a lot. So, and I would get real frustrated. My dad said, look, you can't despair over this stuff, right? He said, anytime you feel like you just are lost, just make your situation 1% better. Just 1% better. And all the despair will go away because you realize tomorrow you can do another percent. You know? And if when you understand that attitude that my dad gave me, I think, has really helped me. Because, you know, when I'm down, I just get to work and make the situation 1% better for James. And that could mean anything from writing him a letter, putting it online. It could mean saying prayers for my son, which I do every day. It could mean talking to elected officials. It could mean taking calls from other – I get hundreds of calls a month from other parents going through this stuff, asking me for advice about how to deal with the courts and because it's completely contrary to what the lawyers will tell you. You know, and I always say, save James, save thousands of children. He's not the only one. So I just try to make things 1% better, and I don't sink into despair if I do that. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Incredible story.
Nation, now you're seeing it, now you don't. I say I'm dead, I don't know, say a word. Now instead of mine, you will find less heard. And if that mind returns, it's quiet. Sorry, it's gonna blind you, a bunch of trying. If that riot starts to weed, stock is gonna buy you buckles and dancing. And if that virus kills no man, stock is gonna buy you all eyes again. This is how things work when everything's broken. Cloud World is here. The Ringmasters have spoken. Come on, come on. We show you how dead. We're fighting and virtues are running the same. It's time is out. All up is on down. Hell, the new normal. The world of the crowd. Got the rough folks bring against you. Sisters and some magic waters. I'll rock and I'll rock your sons or daughters. Like you ask, it's dying body. A little girl trapped in a grown man's body. This is a carnival played on earth. This is the end of the fucking world.
Ashes to ashes,
dust to dust.
It's a weird rot.
It's a queen's trust.
This clown world
will worship me.
This clown world
versus the end of everything.
Ashes to ashes,
dust to dust.
It's simply not,
it's a queen's trust.
This clown world
will worship me.
This is the end.
This is the end of everything. Don't say a word. Stuck instead of mine, you will find less hurt. And if that mind returns, it's quiet. Stuck instead of mine, you will watch this riot. If that riot starts to weed, stuck instead of mine, you buckle to 19. And if that virus kills no man, stuck instead of mine, you will rise again. This is how things work when everything's broken. Cloud World is here.
Our Ringmasters have spoken.
It's time. All up is on down. Hail the new normal. The world of the clown.
Fuck me, I just worked it out, mate. I just worked it out. Like, fucking the Garden of Eden is what we are in, yeah? The Garden of Eden was the last time the white man had was paradise. And then the white man, through Satan, who is the Jew, the serpent, the fork-tongued fucker, subverted the education system. Women don't need to be educated, but the Jew convinced the woman to go and be educated, to eat from the apple of knowledge. And that is where we are today. That's the truth of Genesis. That is the creation of hell on earth, and we've been fighting it ever since. Time to fucking shut. We need to get the chainsaw out to that tree of fucking knowledge. Yeah, there's too many. No, man. Stay away from any educated woman. They are cursed. They're cursed by Satan. Because the woman who did this to him, and the women that are doing this to our children, the majority of them are all the educated, the university students. I've got an ology. I've got an osophy. Cheeky fucking... Tell you that fucking father. Wow, I've gotten over that fucking. The thing is, mate. Yeah, the thing is, the reason why like fucking my emotions have the better of me is like I was taken from my father at the age of 7, and he was a proper strong alpha man. Proper strong alpha man. Yeah. So like just like Giza said, like fucking you give the boys to the men when it's time for them to grow into men, man. And luckily I missed out quite a few formative years, and luckily I then managed to get myself sent to a proper education school where it was masculine, like, thank fuck. But still there's this bit of me that just like fucking, and this is what they've done. They separate us. They separate the men from the boys, and then they turn the boys into girls. And I'm telling you, mate, educated women. Educated, not fucking homemakers. There's a massive difference between a homemaker and an educated woman. Fucking hell, man. That geezer, that father. But Dora, doctrinated, educated, potato, potato, tomato, tomato, chips, fries. You know what I mean? It's all fucking subverted Jewish lies, man. Hail to German fire. How's it going, mate? I mean, the reason why women are so crazy, and it's mad, like fucking, no wonder the women fucking, I've been so indoctrinated to fucking be what the women are told they want a man to be, that no wonder all my relationships fucked up, yeah? Now I've finally worked out that actually, no, fuck you and your opinion, this is how it is. It's too late. Dickhead. What a fucking dickhead. Oh, well, don't be psychodriller, mate. Don't be psychodriller. Find a bird who can cook. If she can read. Don't listen to me, mate. I'm not here to give advice. Fucking hell, I'm just a lunatic. I'm 187 years old, mate. My biggest curse is like, I don't know if you're as a fucking, as a white man, yeah. I've never been a nigger. I wasn't like fucking, oh man, I need to experience as many birds as possible before I die. I've never been like that, man. I'm a serial monogamist. It's been a downfall because they've all been fucking crazy, man. Apart from the one good one, the first one, and I was a dickhead. What a fucking prick. Anyway. See you later, Hoss, mate. Nice to see you. Don't get me wrong, I ain't bitching on or anything. I'm just hopefully sharing my mistakes with any of those out there so you don't make them. Because I'm pretty certain my dad would have taught me everything I needed to know and I missed out on that. You know what my dad would have said? Any of that transgender shit or anything like that? You know what he'd have said?
Let's go. Black people in the place, I'm here to stay. Back. My DJ, yeah. Going all the way. Way. Going all the way. One for the night, two for the day. Let's get the note that we don't. Hi, wanna play?
And I tell you what, and I tell you what, and I tell you what, I tell you what, like fucking, if they asked him, if they went, pardon, what did you say, Mr. Crazy Davey? Because that's what he was known as, Crazy Davey. He'd explain to him. Oh, fucking hell.
Hey.
So technically, they've banned every white father, every white, especially white Christians. The Christians are the most persecuted religion on earth, on God's earth, and that's because nobody understood what really. If you don't comprehend, like I'm telling you the story of fucking Eve eating the apple and the serpent getting Eve to eat the apple. That's definitely today's education system. There you go. And the rest is satanic. So technically every white Christian father, they're trying to kick you out the fucking Roxy, mate. Fuck 'em.
Okay, I never much apply in there. Anyway, said I only wanted well behaved, but do they think a dozen microphones are just back into it? Fuck 'em, tell them to make my stand against what I feel is strongly misled. Just sit there on their other fed arse, feeding off the sweat of less fortunate class. Having a rough seat. Okay, I never much apply in there. Anyway, said I only wanted well behaved, but I think a dozen microphones are just back into it. Fuck 'em, turn them to make my stand against what I feel is strongly misled. Just sit there on their other bit of arms, feeding off the sweat of less fortunate class. Back from the rocks, please. Back from the rocks, please.
I mean, I tell you, that's one white Christian father with strong principles. One, just one. One man on his own. Do you not comprehend how terrified they are of you guys actually getting together as men, proper men? No more bitchery, no more backbiting, just actually fucking united in re-establishing heaven on earth. Do you not fucking, that one story, like, that's the most white pill, like, you know what I mean? Because the battle is eternal. The fight with Satan is eternal. Yeah? Shall we all just get stuck in now? Yeah? Can we all just actually fucking, like, instead of just watching from the fucking sidelines? Welcome, mate.
Bad from the rock sea. Okay, I never much apply in there. Anyway, said I only wanted well behaved, but do they think a dozen microphones are just back into it? Fuck 'em, turn them to make my stand against what I feel is strongly misled. Just sit there on their other feet of arse, feeding off the sweat of less fortunate class. Bad from the rock sea. Okay, I never much apply in there. Anyway, said I only wanted well behaved, but do they think a dozen microphones are just back into it? Fuck 'em, turn them to make my stand.
The thing is, like fucking Dora says, like, Psychotrader, that's why they're stumbling over themselves to make anti-Semitism laws tougher. Mate, there's not enough room for what's coming. They can make all the laws they want. It's only because we're all just patient. Remember, we just wanted to be left alone. Yeah. That's going to be the last things that any of them hear. And I don't like the vision of what I see what's coming, but I can understand why it's coming. I wouldn't want to fuck with any of the white men, mate. Not the way they've been doing it. They've really fucked up, mate. Yeah. If that one man that they're so terrified of has now, we got to watch that video 4 years ago. If that would have been banned, mate. You know what I mean? Yeah. And this is why I say, you develop your own white network. Develop your own white network. Nepotism is what they removed from you. And they told you, oh, why are you being so horrible? Why can't you just be a nice man? Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up, mate. No more Mr. Nice fucking Fuhrer. No more Mr. No, fuck off. Fuck. There's a lot of... No. I'm done and dusted. No, mate. No, they are fucked. They're fucked. They can write as many rules and... Look, mate, it's they only get away with any of that shit because you put up with it. Yeah? When do you stop putting up with it? Yeah? So the thing is, they want you to stop putting up with it in a chaotic way. They want you to kick off. That's what that lesson, they fucking don't listen to that geezer. I dropped the links plenty of times. I haven't got it anymore. Yeah? But you can go and listen to that geezer and listen to what, you've got to fucking understand your enemy and then play your enemy at their own game. And these bitches that are in charge, bitches will never ever be able to play the game better than men, mate. It's only because they've gone like, it's not fair. It's not fair. You need to tie your hands behind your back and shackle your ankles. Yeah. And then you've got to swim the channel. And then you're still not qualified. It's fucking bollocks, mate. Dora didn't say it, but I'm colorblind, mate. No. Reichsfuhrer SS. Sorry. That red on fucking whatever that dark thing. Look. Fuck, well, no, it's Dora's fault anyway. I'm blaming Dora. Fuck Dora. No, don't do that. It's disgusting. No, I'm only joking. And that's what I feel. It's wrong every play. Just sit there when they're up and feed us. Feeding off the sweat of less boots in a club. Banned from the Roxy, mate. Banned from the Roxy. We could fucking. We don't even want to be in the Roxy. We're rebuilding the Roxy, mate. You know what I mean? Yeah. This show is. Like I said, just one man on his own, mate. One man on his own, and he's got laws changed. He turned around in Texas, the Bible Belt, where they've been assaulted and everything, and he got laws changed, mate. Laws changed. You can go to prison for doing shit to kids now, mate. You know what I mean? And where one will fall, the rest shall follow. Where one will fall, the rest shall follow. And we are now at the end of the show. Thank you very much for being here. This has been the Full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show, and I've been your mate, Psycho Driller. Yeah, not too friendly though. Not too friendly. We ain't fucking birds, like, you know what I mean. Like, I'm not here to make friends. I'm just here to share the message. And like, so, and I appreciate that there are folks who are like, ooh, what? But like I said, I'm not here about the personality. I'm here about the message, and the message gets out there, and it gets given to us in many, many ways. This is why the old adage, "Don't kill the messenger," you know what I mean. But also, don't worship the messenger. Don't worship the messenger. Don't put the messenger on a pedestal either way. Just hear the message, share it. If you don't like the way the message is being shared, repackage it and share it yourself. There's more than one way to deal with these rat-faced fucks. You know what I mean? Anyway, it's time for me to say see you later too. I'm sorry, FTJ chat. Like, it wasn't working for me today. If FTJ's streaming, see you later. Odyssey, yeah, cool. If you want to join the chat, join the Telegram, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, see you later too. The White Pill crew, which is Heavy Gustav, Aryan Eagle 88, mate. See you later, Chain Reaction. I'm not trusting your link, because I'm not... No, not after you did that fucking... That Panzer Rickroll or whatever it was. You and your sense of humour. Anyway, thank you very much to Messenger or UHO... And it's too late in the day. I've got shit to do. I've got to get out there, mate. The sun is shining. I feel like I've been wasting. The sun's been shining since 6 o'clock this morning, and I'm like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? What the fuck am I doing this for? There's no rhyme, no reason. I must be some kind of psycho driller. No, I haven't been drilling, but I will be soon. I've got to work out how to. I'm going to build a drilling. I've got to do a bit of directional drilling on my land. So I've got to work out how to. I've got to get something made up to go on my mini digger, and then I'll do a bit of directional drilling. Anyway, but that's a whole different fucking ball game. I might even fucking video it, but then again, I probably won't, because But the thing is, why am I doing this? I don't know. It's because I feel like you fucking need to. If I don't do it, nobody will. Nobody will. And until somebody else turns up to do it, guess what? I'm not the pleasant fucker. I'm the pleasant fucker's mate. And I'm only being pleasant because the pleasant fucker's late. Yeah. And no more Mr. Nice Guy. Can we just stop that shit now? You know what I mean? Anyway, I'm going to say see you later to the GTV crew. See you later to the Goose Stepper, 1488, Rosario. See you later, Simple Goy, Austrian, Reichsführer SS, Hungry Moyle. Sober is way better. But that's his cousin. See you later, Sober is better. See you later, Halo Waffen, Faggot Slayer, Hungarian Watcher. See you later, Zibzab. A Pajit crashed a bus and he thought it was an Airbus. It was a fucking, it could have done with some air if the Pajit's driving it. This stinks, mate. Anyway, see you later, mate. Moderator. What? Fucking hell. Someone's moderate. No wonder it's been a bit chilled. Someone's been moderating the stream. Who's been moderating the stream? Fucking old Andy, mate. Old Andy, mate, the rules are no. No moderators, old Andy. Fucking weird. There's nothing moderate about this stream, mate. So we've got to make you a VIP. Get you out of there, man. Fucking hell. He's like that. What's going on? He wondered where everybody was. He was like, where the fuck is everybody else? Everybody's like that. Nobody told him. No, did they? No. Call yourselves VIPs. You just left old Andy. He's an old boy. Freezing. We turned the heating off in the moderator lounge ages ago, mate. Fucking hell. Somebody get fucking old Andy a hot drink of fucking warm milk. That'll fucking sort him out. Jesus. He'll get the shakes. He's got to teach the cadets how to fucking fire a rifle with, and he's 92, don't you know? Calm down. Anyway, good to see you, old Andy. Take care, mate. Who else have we got here? And last but by no means least, this crew, they're the VIP crew. Just a second, we do this. See you later to End Jewish Privilege, Mr. Foss, Irish Racist Goy, Chain Reaction, Just Ignore Me, Ironclad Iceni, Homeschooled Jedi, Go See Kyle, Dora Lumin, Sir Northman, Mr. Uncle Semite. There you go, that's the Lurker Lounge, the Lurker Cave. Fucking big enough, massive enough. The thing is, you've been lurking, that's why you couldn't. It was like, he's a hard taskmaster, that mate, Mr. Uncle Semite. Once he turns it into the Lurker Lounge, you're not allowed to say anything. You just gotta lurk. Anyway, where are we? Where we got to fucking, where is he? There he is, Mr. Uncle Semite. See you later, Anglo Ohio. Get to work, mate. You got some degeneracy to undo, according to your comments in there. If you didn't see him, you didn't see him. You're never going to see him either. Anyway, so, see you later. Thanks for being here, Anglo Ohio. See you later, Sir Pepe NS, mate. Yeah, I kind of covered it. I kind of covered that news report, but we'll see you again soon. Anyway, and last but by no means least, see you later, Anonymous 88. And I can't remember who asked for this, like fucking, but they said, like, well, could do with a marching tune on the way out. So this is the tune that we're marching out on. I'll see you later, chat. This has been the Full Anglo-Saxon Breakfast Show. I've been your mate, Psycho Driller. Take it easy. Laters, chat. Laters, chat.